Coming up, Fred DeSam Lazaro on the ongoing birth control debate in the Philippines. And Lucky Severson visits Catholic nuns in Colorado who say they love both God and their work as ranch hands. Plus, the popular Muslim hip-hop group Native Dean on observing Ramadan while on the road.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Pope Francis this week approved the creation of a Vatican tribunal that has the power to punish bishops who fail to protect children from clergy sex abuse. Hundreds of abusive priests have been defrocked over the last decade, but this marks the first time the Vatican has created a process to investigate complaints against bishops who may have covered up abuse. Some victims' advocates welcomed the move cautiously, saying it remains to be seen if any bishops will be disciplined. On Wednesday, Francis met with Russian President Vladimir Putin to discuss the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. During their 50-minute closed-door meeting, the Pope urged Putin to restore dialogue and make a sincere effort to achieve peace in the region. They also discussed their mutual concerns about the persecution of Christians in the Middle East. Here in the U.S., President Obama addressed a meeting of the nation's largest organization of Catholic health providers, the Catholic Health Association. He thanked the group for its support of the Affordable Care Act, noting that the bill would not have passed without it. He also spoke of his appreciation for nuns. He did not mention the Affordable Care Act's controversial contraception mandate, which has been opposed by many Catholic groups. Should people be required to be vaccinated, even if it's against their religion? The AMA said this week that it would push for state laws that would require immunizations and not allow exemptions for non-medical reasons, including religious beliefs. The group's announcement comes amid a nationwide debate over mandatory vaccinations, as well as the recent comeback of vaccine-preventable diseases, including measles and whooping cough. Humanitarian groups are warning of a massive food crisis in South Sudan as that country plunges deeper into a civil war that has disrupted a crucial planting season. The Red Cross said nearly 4 million people, more than a third of the country's population, are facing food shortages approaching famine levels. World Vision President Richard Stearns tweeted this week that he personally witnessed the worst hunger he's ever seen during his trip to South Sudan earlier this month. We have a special report today from Fred DeSam Lazaro on the new law and ongoing debate in the Philippines about artificial birth control. The law says every woman should have free access to contraception, and it has had strong backing from those who think the Philippines' soaring population is the principal cause of its poverty. But the Roman Catholic Church, which is very influential in the Philippines, has fought hard against the new law.
It's known as the baby factory, but unlike most factories, the people who run Manila's biggest public hospital wish this one was less productive.
The staff here at the maternity ward say this is a fairly typical, if not a little quieter than usual, day. Still, there are 165 new mothers squeezed into 127 beds.
About 70 babies are delivered every day. Their mothers are treated at no charge. They couldn't afford much anyway, with household incomes of $5 a day, often less. Most, like Irene Ocampo, who's 19, will tell you their pregnancy was unplanned.
I didn't know anything about family planning before becoming pregnant. That's why I had my baby. I would have preferred to start having children at 20 plus, maybe 25.
The hospital recently added a new service to help women control when or whether to have more children.
I want to have 3 to 5 years between them. The family planning staff told me to get fitted with an IUD. I prefer the implant. It lasts for 3 years.
For about a year, the Philippines has begun implementing a law that requires public health facilities to offer free contraceptive services. The measure has long been opposed by the Catholic Church, a powerful institution in the Philippines.
Nowhere in the law does it say that sex is best practice in the context of marriage. It only says that people have a right, you know, to a satisfying sex life. And therefore, we can see more and more people having sex who are not even committed with each other.
But obstetrician Sylvia de la Paz says these contraceptive services have long been legally available in private clinics, unaffordable to the mostly indigent patients who come here.
We want all pregnancies should be wanted and should end in a healthy baby and mother.
De la Paz has worked these wards for 2 decades. In that time, she says, most patients have seen their living conditions go from poor to poorer.
Before, they used to be street children. Now you see street families. No, they sleep in the streets. They have no home.
Most disturbing, she says, has been a spike in teen pregnancies, up 50% in the country in the last decade, more than double in this hospital.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's also exposure to early sexual encounters. The age at first coitus is now, I think, 12 to 14. Where before it used to be 16 to 18, it slid down now.
She says this precocious sexual activity hits hardest in poor neighborhoods, where there's little access to information and the means to prevent pregnancy.
I had no idea that young people like me could have family planning. I did not receive any sex education in school.
Angel came to this neighborhood clinic run by a nonprofit group to be fitted with a contraceptive implant. However, like most teens here, she only learned of this service after becoming pregnant. She was 14.
I wanted to finish my studies to become a teacher. Becoming pregnant broke my dreams.
Some proponents of the new reproductive health law say an entire nation's dream has been broken by its failure to control population growth. The Philippines has much higher poverty than similar-sized nations, like Thailand, with half the birth weight and twice the GDP of the Philippines.
30, 40 years ago, we had the same number of people, approximately. But since then, we have grown much more, such that now Thailand has maybe 60, 65 million people and we have 105 or so. And you can see the difference in gross domestic products. You can see the difference in the way people live.
You know, the Philippines is poor not because of population. The Philippines is poor because of corruption.
Father Hasson argues people are an economic asset that deserve better from their government.
Give people job opportunities, give children education, and then you bring them out in poverty. Just giving them condoms and contraceptives will not automatically draw them out of poverty.
The church has long been a big influence in this predominantly Catholic nation, its moral teachings imprinted in both liturgy and law.
The Philippine Constitution, updated in 1987, says that the state shall equally protect the mother and the unborn from conception. And that's the basis of opposition to the reproductive health law. Opponents argue that just about all methods of artificial contraception can lead to abortion.
The objective was to ensure that our Philippine Supreme Court is not going to come up with a decision like the Roe versus Wade of the United States.
Attorney Maria Concepcion Noche leads a group that argued against the reproductive health law in the Supreme Court.
This is the implant applicator.
The court upheld most of the law, directing the country's Food and Drug Administration to approve contraceptives that don't cause abortion. Noche plans to go back to court, arguing the agency's choices, pills, IUDs, injectables, or implants, can lead to abortion because in some cases they prevent an embryo, legally a person, from attaching to the womb.
They have this secondary mechanism of action of making the uterus unsuitable or hostile for implantation of the fertilized ovum.
Father Hasson draws a distinction between contraception and family planning, a principle with which the Church has no problem, he says.
What the Church consistently has taught is that in your desire to regulate the number of children, choose that option which will promote your physical health, the health of your marriage, the health of your spirituality, even the health of society. And all of this are taken care of in natural family planning.
The Church has long preached natural family planning, where couples monitor the woman's menstrual cycle and must abstain from sex on days when she is fertile. Father Hasson says artificial methods are a symbol of a moral decay that underlies the new law.
Go to the scientific studies. NMP is more effective than the pill. But why did we invent contraceptives? Not because NMP doesn't work, but because we do not want to say no. And that is why we are actually slowly losing our self-mastery, losing our humanity, losing our sense of what sexuality really is all about.
Back in the maternity ward, Blessy Padua, a laundry assistant who did not complete high school, says she and her husband did try what she calls the calendar method without success.
I'm Catholic and I'm aware the Church does not approve of family planning, that God said go and multiply. But at the same time, I already have a lot of kids. I had to stop getting pregnant.
After delivering her seventh child, the 34-year-old Padua opted to be sterilized. Dr. De La Paz says for many women here, especially those younger and unmarried, natural family planning is not a good choice or a choice at all.
A lot of them have challenges with their partners who have issues with alcoholism, you know, no job or inadequate income. You know, so
how many of them are married, would you guess?
Majority not.
1 year into its implementation, the services mandated by the reproductive health law have reached urban public health centers, but about a third of all Philippine women, most in rural areas, still lack access to contraceptive services. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred De Sam Lazaro in Manila.
Now, a wonderful juxtaposition. Benedictine nuns in Colorado, who not only gather to pray seven times a day, but who also work as ranch hands, taking care of their abbey's 80 head of cattle. Lucky Severson visited the St. Walburga nuns.
Near the Colorado-Wyoming border, beneath the snow-covered Mummy Mountains, amongst the grassy meadows, the soothing sounds of psalms being sung by Benedictine nuns, praying for themselves and for the world. All together, they pray over 3.5 hours a day. And then, in between prayers, rushing out to the corral to rein in the cattle, and the cattle don't always cooperate, this is the Abbey of St. Walburga. It's a working ranch, and the nuns are the ranch hands when they are not praying. And they pray together 7 times a day, always in their habits.
You change your clothes a lot, don't you?
We do.
7 times a day?
7 times a day. Mm-hmm.
This is Mother Maria Michael. She's the abbess of the abbey, the mother superior to 23 nuns. She says this is not a lifestyle for everyone.
It's a very hidden life. It's not out for the world to see. And so you have to be pretty willing to be hidden and to believe that your life will make a difference, even though you may not be out in the front.
It's a very cloistered life. The sisters rarely leave the ranch. This place may be hidden, but it's not forgotten. The Abbey Retreat is a popular respite. Wayne and Kathy Mayer come here as volunteers, even though they are not Catholics.
I think once you get off of 287 and you come down the dirt road and you see the meadow and you see the snow-capped mountains in the background, it's just a real calming effect.
Wayne Meyer's brother was seriously injured in a car accident. He asked Mother Maria Michael to pray for him, and the Meyers believe that's the reason his brother survived.
You really feel you're praying for the world. You really take to heart when people write to us and ask us to pray for them. We take it to heart their sufferings, and we bring them in prayer, and we ask God to sincerely help them.
Some come here for the grass-fed organic beef, raised gently and so sought after people get on a list to purchase it. The sisters love cows, especially the nun in charge of the ranch, Sister Maria Wahlberger, who has been with the Abbey for 25 years. The cattle know when Sister Wahlberger is driving a tractor that hay is on the way.
But the cows, too, keep you rooted. They're beautiful in their own way. We love cows, everyone who works here. But they're also, they're humble animals, and they teach us a lot of patience.
The patience is easy to understand because the cows don't act very humble. The nuns here range in age from 23 to 93. Sister Ann Lee is the youngest. She's been here almost 2 years.
I loved farms and animals and, you know, just nature, but I didn't really associate that with being a nun until I came here.
For Sister Ann, the Abbey ended up at the end of a search for a life with purpose.
Well, you know, I would like to be a spy. I was a firefighter and EMT. Yeah, there was just so much that I wanted to do. You have to decide. I can't do it all. I'd be a jack of all trades, you know, master of none. So I want to choose the highest one that I can do.
If the smile on her face means anything, Sister Ann has found her calling. All the nuns here say they have been called by God.
You couldn't do it without the call, because it is a hard life, but it's a glorious life.
Many Catholic communities and orders no longer wear traditional black and white habits, but they are the uniform here, and Sister Magdalene Birdlemeyer from the Bronx, who runs a gift shop, wouldn't have it any other way.
People are hungry for the tradition of the church that has women in habits that they can see. There are many wonderful religious sisters who are out doing all kinds of wonderful work. But because they're dressed like everybody else, people don't see them.
We're all human. There's temptations all the way around. But when you're wearing the habit, you understand your actions mean more and that you are responsible for something greater.
I hope no one would ever associate us as being ruler-wielding nuns with, you know, our disciplinarian beating stick.
Sister Maria Gertrude, she's been here 10 years.
Here, we make it our mission to praise God all day long, all night long, with our entire lives, and to also be a place where others can come and find God.
St. Benedict left the decadence of Rome around 500 A.D. to lead an austere life. The nuns of the Abbey of St. Wahlberger fled Germany and the Nazis in 1935 and ended up in Colorado and eventually here in a town that no longer exists called Virginia Dale. The Benedictines' closeness to nature and their manner of prayer dates back hundreds of years.
You get lots of requests from people around
the... We get so many requests. People call us on the phone with lists of things to pray for. I mean, people are suffering in so many ways. It's very edifying to me to know how they depend on our prayers. I mean, really, they have great faith in us that makes us very humble.
The ranch covers almost 300 acres, all donated, and includes some animals you wouldn't expect.
So one day he gives me a call and says, "Sister, would you milk my water buffalo for me?" I said, "Richard, you don't have a water buffalo." And he said, "Well, I have the opportunity to get one. Would you board it and milk it for us?"
So they milk the water buffalo and make wonderful mozzarella cheese. And now they've got a baby water buffalo named Yoda.
Everybody's got a water buffalo. Mine is fat, but yours is slow. Where they get them, I don't know. Everybody's got a water buffalo. Woo!
They also raise bees. That's Sister Gertrude's job, and apparently she's doing it right. Martin Hardison is a master beekeeper who worked all over the world to save the declining bee population.
Here they're thriving. They're doing great. This environment, of course, is completely pristine, you know, and that's a real advantage. You know, they don't use pesticides out in the field.
And then, of course, there's the llama, the watchdog, something that's needed around here. Bears have found the bees and their honey, and the mountain lions are fond of calves.
The cattle were grazing in the hay pastures, and we saw with our own eyes a llama chase a mountain lion out of the field.
The nuns rise before sunup, pray, tend the chores, and do it all over again the next day. And they feel they're experiencing heaven on earth.
You have in the midst here a silence that just breathes in you the greatness of God. There's an immensity you can only grasp in the middle of something so grand.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Virginia Dale, Colorado.
Finally, on our calendar this coming week, with the sighting of the new moon, Muslims around the world will begin observing their holy month of Ramadan. Those who are able are expected to abstain from food and drink from sunup to sundown. This can pose special challenges for Muslims in many professions, and we talked with members of the popular Muslim hip-hop group Native Deen about how they observe Ramadan while on tour.
At times when the Muslims are coming together during the month of Ramadan or Eid celebrations or things like that, we have something that is a service to the community.
You go to places like Malaysia, Indonesia, Turkey, and stuff like that where we perform, or even in Egypt, that have big events surrounding this type of kind of devotional music.
It's kind of, sometimes it conflicts because we want to have time with our families. We want to, you know, be connected to our communities.
You have to do things maybe on off hours that other people wouldn't. You may have to do your things early in the morning or after the shows and after everything's done on a personal level.
We view it as this is all, you know, God's work. It's sometimes we want to do this, sometimes we need to do that, but that's one of the ways that we deal with it. There's a real purpose and a real need to what we're doing. All my interactions with people of other faiths who are not Muslim, when they find out that we're in a Muslim band, when they find out that we're fasting, it's like the greatest thing. Like, for real? Really? Y'all Muslim? Tell me about that. And it's like, you know, it's like some of them have never heard of this. You fast all, and they want to have a conversation. It becomes engaging.
Most people think it's a hunger strike. They don't realize that it's, you know, we start with a meal in the morning, and then we have a meal at night.
We should be at the top.
Inshallah.
With the cream of the crop.
Inshallah.
We grew up here in the States, so we, when we're fasting here, it's just like the small pocket of Muslim community that's fasting. But there's still, everything's going on. Whereas one time when we were in Turkey, we went to Turkey during Ramadan, and we wanted to experience how it felt to fast in a society that's doing it with you.
All of the experiences that I have during Ramadan, when we're on tour fasting, have always been one that it's like a blessing, you know, because There's so many people I feel that would wish that they would have the opportunity to be able to perform, to do what they like to do, their art. Basically, this is hip-hop is our art. And to be able to do that in front of an audience, you know, and to be able to go around the world doing it.
We were in Egypt. When it was time to break fast, they would set up a tent, and they would, like, have, like, this long stretch of a table that could go for a city block. Being able to tour in these moments, we get a perspective that many people don't get. You know, we get a perspective to say, okay, I've experienced it here in Egypt. I've experienced it in Turkey. They light a cannon, you know, and a cannon goes off, you know, and I'm like, what? And then the guy's like, oh, no, he said, don't get worried. Don't go get nervous. He said, don't worry, it's just time to break fast. And when we were little, we used to just listen to the phone, like, until the time, we would call the time on the phone and listen until that minute. And he says, like, it's 8:59. He's like, oh, yeah, it's time! You know, and then we go break.
Come on!
We got to pray in Jerusalem on the last 10 nights, on one of our last times there. in Ramadan. And that was special.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's much more on our website, including an extended version of our Ramadan story. You can also listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more from Native Dean.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.